Target Archery.
And on today's show on the Barebow Archery Podcast, I've got Adam Coming. He's the man behind Archery Mental Mastery, and he's got some products out there for target panic and trying to make yourself a better archer with the mental game. So Adam joins me on the line now. Hello, Adam.
Hi, Glenn. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm great. What's the situation? Where are you now? Where are we recording this?
Well, I've recently moved within the last year, so I'm just outside Coventry. I'm near a little village called Meriden, which is actually the centre of England, the actual centre of England. So I'm not too far from the actual centre of England.
Oh, cool. So tell the listeners a bit about yourself, Adam, and what you do and where we can find your services and how we can get in touch with you, and then we'll crack on and have a bit of a discussion. So just tell us a bit about yourself, Adam.
Well, my name's Adam. I'm a hypnotherapist and coach by job, by trade. I do obviously a lot with people with the mental side of things, whether that's mental health, also basically and obviously with sport as well. So I've been doing it for over 10 years. And I really enjoy what I do, really enjoy helping people to improve who they are and hopefully get a better experience out of life and out of archery.
Great stuff. And where can we find you? Where can we find you? Have you got a website and that kind of thing? Where can we find you?
So all my archery stuff is concentrated at archerymentalmastery.com. My therapy side of things is Beautiful Life Hypnotherapy.
Cool. I think the listeners got a chance to write that down now. So just tell me how you got into... are you an archer yourself? How did you come about making these kind of products, this archery mental mastery? And I know you've got a product for target panic. Are you an archer yourself? Did you go on this journey yourself and kind of realise that there needed to be something out there for it?
That's exactly what happened. I was just doing archery at a local club. I was over Birmingham way at the time. I was had a girlfriend lived over there who did archery. She introduced me to it. So we used to go and shoot on Saturdays and Sundays at a local club. And it was while I was at a local club, I used to mess around and just I really enjoyed it. But I thought, I wonder if I can improve my archery, my handicap, by applying some of the skills and techniques I already had. Till this point, I hadn't really bothered. But what I started to do is to apply my knowledge of sports psychology, if you will, to my archery. And what I found, not surprisingly, is a vast improvement in my scores within weeks. So what I actually did was started to write these things down, what worked, what didn't work. I experimented with a whole load of different range of techniques over around about 6 months to a year. So it wasn't a quick process. I wanted it to be thorough. And what I found is I made rapid improvements. However, for me, that wasn't good enough. I threw all the techniques out to the other archers in the club so they could test them. And what we also found is everybody started improving rapidly. Their handicaps were coming down. They had more concentration, more focus. They were able to relax more on the line. So that's when I thought, you know what? I ought to write this stuff down. And that's what I started doing, is writing it down. And then I turned it into my book, or it's more of a guide. I like to look at it, which became Archery Mental Mastery.
Oh, great. So describe what Archery Mental Mastery is. What is the course? What is the plan? What do you do? How do you get this information to people out there? How does it work? So could you explain that to us?
Yeah, certainly. So Archery Mental Mastery is based on, obviously, what I've explained, some of the techniques I knew anyway as a therapist. So it was a matter of me getting these techniques together, putting them all together, using such things like neuro-linguistic programming, which is most people know as NLP. So there's an element of NLP in it. So neuro being the brain, linguistic being language, programming being reprogramming. So there's quite a lot of that. So what I did, took all the techniques I knew, put it into this book, so it helps people to reprogram the mind. So it doesn't take much to reprogram the mind. So my thinking around this, and the neurology tells us it only takes 2 weeks to start to rewire the brain again. So if you can imagine rewiring more positive habits around archery, i.e. relaxation, concentration, and focus, you can actually start to rewire the brain really quickly in order to become better at those things. So the idea was to take all my knowledge of neurology, NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, hypnosis, and also various other forms of sports psychology, and amalgamate into one guide. Initially, it was going to be like an ebook, which it was. It was a PDF. And then I wrote and produced a hypnosis MP3 to go with that. So the idea was people have this e-guide, they can practice all the techniques and also help themselves using the power of hypnosis.
Sounds amazing, really, really good. So how does something like NLP, can you give me like an example of something? Because you mentioned mindset as well. So what are the kind of common issues that you've either seen or that you had yourself or the members of your archery club had, and how would NLP overcome them, and kind of just give us an example of something that you could change, like you say, in that kind of maybe that 2 week time frame?
Yeah, something very simple. A lot of sports psychology and a lot of the techniques are based on visualization. So when we do any exercises in NLP, we want to be able to see, hear, and feel what you want to feel. So when we start to visualize things, we effectively give the brain some new information. And if we keep feeding the brain this new information, it effectively starts to become a new cognition in the brain. So if you could imagine your brain like a metal filing cabinet, and we are putting new cognitions in. So the brain has got all this old information. So by doing the visualizations over 2 weeks, so visualizing, being relaxed, chilled out, before you take the shot, draw in the string, just aiming, being nice and relaxed, seeing yourself nice and steady, hearing the normal sound you'd hear around, whether it's inside or outside, and just feeling, seeing and hearing yourself being nice and relaxed. You are putting new cognitions into the brain. The brain goes, all right, great, I can use that. Now, here's the interesting fact that some people may or may not know or may not even considered. The mind, the brain, does not know the difference between imagination and reality. So if you imagine something, the brain takes it on as reality. So just imagine what difference that could make if you started to imagine more taking the perfect shot. No distractions. The brain would take that on, and the more you practice it, the more the brain will just assume it takes a perfect shot.
Great. I mean, I wish I could. It takes a lot of discipline, though, doesn't it? It's not something where you just, you know, you listen to your CD, you read your book, and you go, "Oh, that's it. I'm done now. I've visualized a couple of times, and I'm done." It does take a lot of kind of discipline, but you're providing the information there for people to use, aren't you?
Exactly. Like with anything, the main key is with anything we want to do in life. I know we're talking about archery, but a metaphor for life is be consistent. So whether you're practicing something new, we need to be consistent. So if we're consistently good at something, or consistently good at practicing, perfect practice makes perfect, then we start to get better results. If we're consistently bad at something, then we get consistently worse results. And it's a bit like practicing some. We've all done it where we want to become, say, better, getting less distracted. Or it could even just be just something very general, like become more focused or more concentrated at something. But we still need to practice. We know the brain takes these things on within 2 weeks. It actually rewires. There's new neurology going on in the brain. Hardwires a neuron network in the brain after 2 weeks. However, you are correct in what you say, Glenn, that just because we've done it for 2 weeks, if we continue to do it, that wiring becomes stronger. If we stop doing it, the wiring starts to become dormant, and therefore we need to carry on. So definitely 100% what I'll say to people is be consistent with it all the time. Even if it's working, still do it, because you still need to keep reminding the neurology in the brain, keep firing that neural network off all the time that you're doing this thing, and being consistent with practice, physical and mental, is the key.
Yeah, and when you said physical and mental, practicing both, that's where recently I've kind of fell down. I had an injury, when was it, last October, and I couldn't shoot for, I think it's practically 6 months. I had one shoot, which I foolishly did the World Indoor Series in the middle of it. I practiced for a couple of days, shot the tournament, and then was kind of almost back at square one. And kind of rebuilding after that, what I really neglected was the mental side of it. I had great form. I was strong. I could pull. I went from not shooting anything to kind of working my way up to 42 pounds on the fingers. And, you know, I kind of got my gear pretty much sorted, my form sorted, but the mental side, I did not practice. And it didn't take long for the kind of cracks to appear. So yeah, definitely practicing the mental and, you know, as well as doing the physical stuff.
There was a story, I think I wrote it, I'm pretty sure I wrote it in the book, about a guy who was supposed to have been shot down during Vietnam. And he say he spent something like 7 years in captivity. And he was obviously bored, wanted to help his mental state. So every day he played golf in his mind. Now, he played golf at his local golf course. And he used to take him, he said, I think, 4 to 5 hours every day. So he'd literally play every shot on every hole of this golf course. So when he got released and rehabilitated, he still carried on playing these games during this time in his mind. But he actually went to play a game of golf and went round in par. He went round in about 72, I think. Now, what he said before he got captured, he was going around this golf course in about 89 or 90. He'd never, ever gone around in par. So what he'd actually done, like I said earlier, with his consistent practice, what he'd actually done is programmed his mind so his mind did not know how to take a bad shot. So every time he hit that golf ball, he was hitting them straight and long. Every time he went for a putt, he hit it perfectly. So he programmed his mind for only success. And it's a bit like people like when we have a look at different sportsmen like Usain Bolt, the sprinter, he has practiced a race thousands of times in his mind and he's never lost. Then he goes on the track, runs, and usually wins. So if we can program our mind to success, if you could imagine your mind as a vast untrapped resource that you can program, they reckon the mind's got something like equivalent to, I think it's 2.5 million gigabytes of memory. So if you can imagine, I wonder what we use and what we don't use. If you can imagine utilizing that power that we have, utilizing the thing that everyone carries around with them every day, we don't have to do anything special. We just have to practice a little bit more. And as you said, when you neglect these things, obviously, if you don't use it, you lose it. Even over 6 months, like you said, when you had that injury, you probably just didn't really think about doing the mental side of it because you weren't doing the physical side of it. However, I wonder what the difference would have been, Glenn, if you had done some mental exercise and kept that up. I wonder if you think that would have made an improvement. I suspect it would have done.
Yeah, I 100% agree. It definitely would have done. It would have got me straight back in the game, and I would have been prepared to go to competition straight away. But some of the things you were talking about before, about, you know, a lack of focus, distraction, kind of not having a consistency in my mental kind of process. All that kind of came out. The first few competitions, I was lucky, I think, and it didn't really show up. I was kind of more focused on my form, but as the other competitions went, I realised that the mental game had slipped, you know, back to kind of not beginner level, but kind of after, say, maybe a year or so of shooting, my mental game had gone back that far. And it takes work. I know a lot of the people I've spoke to on the podcast before, all the top guys, and I was speaking to one of them, a world champion 3D archer, the other day, and on his videos, David Jackson, go check it out on YouTube, David Jackson, world archery 3D champion from Lac La Biche. He said he uses visualization in the videos as well. He said it to me. We've talked offline, and you know, visualization is a part of his game. So all the top guys are doing it, and maybe that's what separates the top guys from the guys that have also got, you know, decent form, shoot enough, practice enough, but they're not doing the visualization. They're not doing the mental practice.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, it's a combination of both. There's an old adage, isn't it? When we're practicing something, it's 90% physical, 10% mental. And when we're in competition, it's 90% mental, 10% physical. I don't think that's quite right, but I understand where that's come from. But yeah, certainly what you're saying and what everyone seems to have said is they go the extra mile. They find out, and this is the key, they find out what's useful and what's not useful. And when I wrote my program, and I say to a lot of my clients, you know, not everything in my program or not everything I talk about may resonate with you. But if you find the things that are useful and discard the things that you don't find that are not useful, you'll go a long way to being successful.
Yeah, that's very, very true. Sorry, we just had a little bit of an interruption there. My phone went off in the studio, so apologies to our listeners. But I think we got the gist of what you were saying there. How much does things like self belief, self esteem, self image impact on performance, and do they kind of contribute to the kind of anxiety people feel? Because for me, originally when I started off doing archery, it was very, very relaxing. I started it off to kind of help myself relax, and as I became kind of competitive, that subsided quite a lot. So I think maybe that's the kind of performance anxiety, because you have expectations and you kind of build up expectations in yourself, and maybe that's different. But how much does the kind of self-belief, self-esteem, self-confidence, especially in archery, confidence is apparently a really big kind of element in success. How does that kind of thing impact on performance?
I think it can impact massively, because if you're doing really well in archery, but then self-doubt creeps in, it's going to affect your performance, you know. And interestingly, we tend to, as human beings, especially people, sports people, put a lot of pressure on ourselves. So often the pressure it can occasionally come from external things like coaches, parents, you know, things like that. But a lot of the pressure comes from ourselves, pressure to perform, pressure to win. And when we start going through the levels, when we start becoming more and more successful, like you have, Glenn, then I think that pressure can increase on ourselves if we allow it to. Now, when we're talking about confidence and self-esteem, that's a massive issue with people. You know, if you don't believe you're good enough, what are you doing there? You know, so most people have a level of self-belief that they're good enough to be where they are. But it's when we start to go up the levels even more that self-doubt tends to creep in, especially when you're talking like when you get to a sort of world level, you start thinking, you get like what they call imposter syndrome, where people start thinking, am I actually good enough to be here? Am I going to get found out? Those sort of things. So it's massive. But interestingly, confidence, when I ask people what it is, most people can't put their finger on it because it's not a physical, tangible thing. So it's something, in a way, that's sort of self-created and self-sustained. So we can work on that very easily, confidence, but we must have the correct tools to do it. So self-belief, self-confidence, and self-esteem as well is massive, because if you don't feel good about yourself, you know, there's something wrong there, isn't there, that needs to be addressed. And it, sometimes having that massive amount of pressure on one's shoulders, I think, sort of takes away from the original point of starting archery. Like you said, you really, when I started, like you, when most people started, it was just a fun thing to do, wasn't it? Turn up at a field, you know, hit a target for an hour or so, go home. That was it. And it didn't really matter whether you did any good or not. It was just a bit of fun. But when we start going up the levels, when we start becoming go into competitions, whether that's within the local club or sort of, as we call them, county or state competitions, I think they're called in America, or, you know, UK competition, UK wide, that's when we start to put the added pressure on ourselves, because we want to perform, we want to win. It's human nature. We wouldn't be there if we didn't want to win. So there is that added pressure that we put on ourselves to perform, to do well, to look good, to get the result that we've put all those hours of training into. And often, you know, it can be very disappointing when we don't quite perform the way we wanted to. You think, you know, I've practiced for this competition for a month, 2 months, and I didn't do as well as I thought. However, there's always another day. And that's the time, really, sometimes, you know, when we don't get to the level we wanted, don't quite succeed, it teaches us more than we would have succeeded. So, you know, sometimes not having that confidence and self-belief is a good thing in one way, because you know it's a weakness that you need to work on. Turn anything into a strength. So I think it was my old martial arts instructor, he used to say, if he had a particular technique that he was weak at, he used to practice that technique religiously until it became a strong technique. And the mind's the same, self-confidence is the same, self-esteem is the same, belief is the same. It all needs the same amount of work mentally.
Yeah, and I definitely definitely agree there. I had a competition recently, and it was quite a bad result for me for the way I was feeling when I went into it. And it was all down to kind of the mental game, the physical side of it. Wasn't a problem. I was shooting the kind of in the best form that I'd shot for a very, very long time, but it turned out to be the biggest wake up call learning opportunity. And it was something that I needed. Essentially, it was like a massive kick up the arse to say, this is a huge deficiency in your shooting, and you need to sort it out. And you've been kind of given this lesson, so that you go away, and if you don't see the lesson, then it's only going to get worse until you see the lesson. So for definite, I mean, that's from my own personal experience, that's it's most definitely true. And, you know, how do external worries, you know, if you're a performer, not necessarily an archer, but a sportsman, an athlete, maybe you're on the stage or something like that, they're all kind of are susceptible to performance anxiety. What can you kind of do other than obviously have a look at archery mental mastery and maybe have a session with you? What can people do just on a basic level to stop kind of worries in outside life and you know, that kind of performance anxiety from getting a hold of them?
So externally, I've talked about this on my Facebook page and things. We can do certain things, simple things, like we know if you go to competition, there's going to be other people stood next to us, certain noises, certain things going on that we can expect. So really, we can deal with them. I had a friend who was a very good level boxer, boxed for the British title. And he was going in as a massive underdog on this fight. And so what he did before he walked in the ring, he did the ring walk while no one was in there. But played a tape with people booing him and shouting him, and so he knew what to expect when he went in. So it wasn't a shock to him. So we can, again, mentally prepare for it. Interestingly, what people can do about any kind of anxieties and things, and this is a thing that I've learned over the last 10 years, and I call it like psychoeducation of my clients. So what is the thing to remember is all thoughts, all behaviours, and all emotions have a pattern to it. So we talked about anxiety. Would you mind if I just told you what the pattern of anxiety is, Glenn?
No, go for it. Go for it.
Because I think it'd be really useful for people to learn. So when people have like anxiety, like any behavior, there's a definite pattern. And my job is to let people uncover that pattern for themselves and go, ah, I'm doing this, I'm doing X, I'm doing Y, I'm doing Z, in order to create this. So what happens is, with archers, for example, we have a stimulus. So the stimulus would be there's a competition coming up, or they've got to go to a competition, or they're at a competition. What happens then is the brain goes into the cognition phase. I covered this a little bit earlier, goes into that filing cabinet, pulls the file out and says, what happens when you normally go to an archery competition? Oh, get nervous, don't shoot very well, fall apart. Puts the cognition, the file back, closes the door. Now that creates the emotion, thoughts and feelings around anxiety. It creates the feeling of anxiety. So you get the emotion and then the feeling. So the feeling is the last part of that process. However, there's all sorts of stuff going on as well. What I've found is, and this is massively influential to what people think and feel, people must have to tell themselves something and visualize something. So let me give you an example. I'm going to put you to task now, Glenn. I'm going to get you to do something. So
you've got to get me to work.
To prove a point. Yeah, I've got to get you to work. To prove a point. And everyone listening at home can do this exercise as well, because it's an interesting one. I want you, Glenn, to instantly create motivation without thinking about anything or telling yourself anything now. Can you do it?
No.
No. And that's, it's a no-win situation exercise. You'll never be able to do it. So what that tells us is there must be a thought process to create everything. And that's what happens. The internal dialogue that goes on is massively underestimated by people. And I'm finding it's what they're telling themselves, how they're telling themselves, and why they're telling themselves is important. So let me just dig a little bit deeper into this, because this information could make the difference for somebody. If internally, now, why the mind won't know any difference between what you're saying internally and what you're saying externally. It's a bit like the imagination thing we talked about earlier. So if in your mind you're saying stuff like, oh God, I feel really anxious. Oh, I can remember last time I was here. Oh, I'm not going to shoot very well. Oh, I'm going to really mess up today. What do you think the result will be?
Yeah, it's obvious, isn't it?
Obvious to some. Now, here's the thing. We all have conversations with ourselves, but we seldom listen.
Okay.
To what we're saying.
Okay.
So we have these automatic conversations running in our heads every day, and we don't listen to them that closely. However, internal dialogue, if we were to slow it down and just turn it round to something completely different, like one of my favorite three sayings is, I feel calm, relaxed, and in control. Now, when we say that, the mind is looking for something, some more suggestion. Because when we're in an anxious state, the brain goes like this. Now, a lot of people heard of fight and flight, right?
Yeah, definitely.
But there's a freeze phase. Now, the freeze always happens before the fight and flight. So that's the brain freezing, waiting for information. It's waiting for a suggestion. So if the suggestion after that is, oh, I feel nervous, anxious, I'm not going to shoot very well, or I feel sick, then that the brain's going to take that on and go, okay, thanks for that. Thank you very much for that information. I'll act on that. However, at that freeze stage, if we say, I feel calm, relaxed, and in control, and it's a matter of, like we said earlier, practicing this and saying in a calm, relaxed way, we are going to have a different outcome.
Yeah, definitely.
Even if you use the same words like, oh, no, I feel anxious. Oh, no, I'm not going to shoot very well. It doesn't resonate.
Yeah.
Doesn't resonate, does it?
No.
At all. And in the body, it won't resonate in the same way. So sometimes we just have to change small things to make the biggest difference. So when we're changing small things, tonality is important. Pace is important as well. Yeah, so we're changing what we say sometimes, how we say it, and it will make a massive difference. And because everything we tell ourselves, and this is another good thing to listen to, everything we tell ourselves is a direct command. Think of it like that. Everything we tell ourselves is a direct command. So if that's the case, be very careful what you tell yourself.
Oh, yeah, for definite. On that kind of fight, flight, freeze kind of, you know, that kind of reaction to what we perceive as a stressful situation. Because in reality, an archery competition shouldn't be a stressful situation. We're not under threat. I was watching a video on YouTube the other day, and the guy said, you know, you need to take command of your breathing. You know, if you're not breathing, you're not thinking, because you kind of put yourself in panic mode because you stop breathing. He said the first thing that the kind of combat troops were taught was their breathing, because then they could start to make decisions. Otherwise, they were kind of completely at the mercy of fight, flight, or freeze. And then he said the next thing is, once you've kind of got a little bit, you know, a little bit of control with your breathing, they've got a little kind of trick that they use, which is called C or T, which is challenge or threat. And it was to stop, you know, it's to start your brain working to take you out of a kind of an automatic response, so that you then used your kind of conscious mind to determine whether something was a challenge, i.e. a competition, or a threat, like a threat to your life. And I kind of thought, well, it's actually very simple, but I'm yet to put it into practice, but I thought it was a very simple thing to do. And, you know, we hear a lot about, you know, you need to control your breathing, because, you know, if you stop breathing, your kind of body starts producing stress chemicals straight away. So you're not doing yourself any favours if you stop breathing. It's not conducive to good health, I believe.
No, always keep breathing.
Yeah. Well, that's a really good tip, You mentioned as well on your website and in your book, and you've got Facebook as well. You mentioned it earlier. Just want to plug your Facebook.
Yeah, if people want to catch up with me on Facebook, I tend to post about 3 times a week on there. And it's Archery Mental Mastery as well, so they can find me on Facebook as well. That's about the only sort of social media I do with it, just Facebook really. So, yeah.
Right, cool.
Have a look.
So what is mindset? What's different from what we talked about? What is mindset in itself?
I think mindset can be 1,000 different things to different people.
Right.
So I don't think, for me, there's not a definitive answer, because it could mean something different to you than it means to me. For me, it means mindset is how you approach things mentally.
The way you kind of think about life or tasks or stuff like that.
Yes.
Just being prepared
for
you know, an eventuality, an outcome, and having considered stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because we can prepare for the majority of things.
Yeah, yeah.
There's obviously stuff we can't, and there's a saying within the personal development industry that we can't always control what's going on around us, but we can control our reaction to it. So we can, to a certain extent, just like you were talking about earlier, what that guy said, he was in the military. I've got a lot of friends in the military, or ex, or still serving. Now, what he's on about is very interesting, because he said what he's saying you should do, and this is correct, because any kind of anxiety-based thing is an emotional reaction. We need to trip our brain over to the logical side. So when we're talking about anxiety, we're only using the emotional side of our brain, the right-hand side of the brain. We need some thought and brain power to go to the left, which is the logical side, in order to compute things completely, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. The two different hemispheres, from what I've seen, have, you know, slightly different functions, and it's the kind of amalgamation of the two that kind of determines your personality, because that determines how you react in certain situations. That I'm not a psychologist or anything like that. It's just from what I've read. Don't take my word for gospel. Like,
it's very interesting what I said. I thought that was very good. I mean, one of the techniques I teach people, and it's a very good way to trick the brain, stop the brain from thinking in a emotional way, and you may have heard this, people have used it for years for different things, but it's very simple, very easy. Put an elastic band on your wrist and then pull it hard, not too hard, but enough to make yourself go, ow.
Yeah.
So what that does, if you're thinking in an anxious way, it interrupts the pattern. You know, I talked about patterns earlier. It interrupts that pattern of thinking. So you can start to think differently afterwards. So you go out, oh God, I was thinking like that, now I need to think, so ask myself a logical question, for example.
I've seen something similar but slightly more extreme, when, you know, people get themselves into a complete panic and you need to do something to kind of snap them out of it. And sometimes it does require a slap across the face for them to, it's the kind of jolt that takes them out of that kind of emotional side of their brain.
Not advised. I wouldn't advise anyone to do
that. We're not advising violence, no.
I did something I didn't slap a client, but I had a client who came in for a panic attacks a few years ago. And they sat down and they started to have a panic attack in my therapy chair. So I had a tennis ball to hand, which I use for certain therapy techniques. And I just threw it, so it hit his head. So it hit him on his forehead. And he sort of snapped out of it. What do you do that for? I went, stop your panic attack. Has it? He went, So I interrupted the pattern. We call it a pattern interrupt in psychology.
Yeah.
And that's one of the most powerful things we can do in order to change a behavior that we want to change, interrupt that old pattern and introduce a new one.
Cool. That's great. I just briefly want to talk about target panic before you go. Because we have done it quite a few times already, but it's still something that kind of is kind of a topic of discussion. Is target panic, is it a physical thing or is it a mental thing?
It's a mental thing that manifests itself physically.
Okay.
So, I was saying about the pattern of anxiety earlier?
Yeah.
It'll be exactly the same pattern for a target panic. So we have this certain set of patterns, we allow and let them run, and we don't know what to do in order to stop them. So whether I don't think it's actual panic, because if people are having a panic attack, the last thing you could do is shoot a bow with an arrow in it, because you'd think you're having a heart attack.
Yeah.
So I think it's the term is probably wrong. It's probably target anxiety is more an appropriate thing to call it.
Yeah.
So again, what it is about, you need to break that pattern. You need to start to recognize what the pattern is, whether it starts before you go to the shoot, when you're there, or when you start, you know, it could be simply when you start putting your bow together. It could be the first time you select an arrow. There has to be something there. There has to be a trigger. It doesn't automatically happen. People think it automatically happens because they've allowed that to happen so many times that it sort of becomes an automatic unconscious process. You know, I was saying earlier, people have conversations with themselves but don't quite listen to what they're saying.
Yeah.
It's the same sort of principle that it can sort of become an automatic process or feel like it's an automatic process, but it isn't. There will be a process to this behavior. There'll be a pattern to it. And it's a matter of uncovering that pattern, stopping it as soon as you can, and reintroducing something new. So, for example, like the elastic band, it could be snap the elastic band. That's going to interrupt the pattern. Then you need to introduce the opposite to what would normally happen, which is anxiety. You need to introduce some form of relaxation. But we can do this away from, we can do this away from the line. It doesn't need to be done at the archery club. It doesn't need to be done at a competition. It can be practiced mentally before you get there. Don't forget, what we want to do is create new cognitions for the brain, new references for the brain to reference when the time's right. So if we use stuff like traditional and classic conditioning, like where we condition ourselves to be relaxed. So here's a technique where you pick up your riser and you squeeze the riser. But when you're squeezing the riser, you think of something that really relaxes you. It could be a time when you're on holiday on the beach, chilling out. It could be a time when you were just sat at home enjoying a movie, but a time when you felt really relaxed. Now you squeeze your riser for 3 seconds, let it go, and repeat that exercise 3 times and keep repeating it and keep repeating it. What naturally is going to happen is your body and mind is going to associate picking that riser up with relaxation. So you pick your riser up, your body will just naturally relax. Then you'll be in a better place to take the shot. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Because when I first started out, as probably everyone did, when you picked your bow up, it was a relaxing thing that you did. And then, you know, once you started to do it a bit more competitively, you kind of started to associate a bit of anxiety with it. So yeah, there's obviously a pattern there. So when you pick your bow up in a competition, maybe it triggers that kind of thought pattern. You go, yeah, okay, in the filing cabinet. Oh, it's that thought pattern we want. Yeah, over there. And, you know, you're already kind of programmed to do that. And I know at the minute there's a discussion going on about triggered shots. So, I mean, for Olympic recurve, that would be the clicker. But for bare bow, which clickers are not allowed, that would be what's called a sear, which is basically flicking your thumb off the edge of a riser or off your tab so that you kind of get that because it comes as a surprise. You don't quite know when it's going to happen. Maybe that surprise is like flicking the elastic band that breaks that kind of thought process, and at the same time you let go of the string, so that thought, you either prevent that thought from coming because you don't know when the shot's going to go off, or as if those thoughts are in your head or they're trying to get in your head, that shock maybe, you know, stops that train of thought and you go off in a different direction. So yeah, it's all really, really interesting stuff. Do you do anything for target panic? Is it something that you cater for with archery mental mastery?
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of tips and tricks in the original book as well. And some people have said, you know, just listening to doing the program, listening to the CD has helped tremendously. Obviously, I bought out the new MP3, which is hypnosis-based, because that's what I do, specifically for target panic.
Okay, so cool.
So that's the reason I bought it out. I've had some really good results. I'm still getting feedback back and results back. But so far, it's been quite successful with the people it's helped, which I'm happy about.
That's great. That's great. I'm always happy when people get sorted for, you know, issues that they're having. And I'm glad that there's people like you out there, Adam. It's been great to chat with you. And really, thanks again for your time and you know, the advice that you've given. And just give us a quick plug again for where we can find you on Facebook and on the web.
So on the website, it's go onto your favorite search engine and put Archery Mental Mastery. and you'll find me at my website. You'll also probably find my book on Amazon and various other things on there, all my products as well. On Facebook, again, Archery Mental Mastery, you'll find my Facebook page. There I tend to just write lots of different posts, free advice, and just trying to help people as much as I can. As far as the therapy is concerned, if you wanted to find me, you find Beautiful Life Hypnotherapy or BL Hypnotherapy, and you can find my therapy page there with all the information about me and my services. And if people wanted to work with me one-to-one, just give me a shout, contact me, and we arrange a time and a date that suits us both, and then do the work that needs to be done. Can I just say, Glenn, thank you so much for inviting me onto this podcast. It's been a real pleasure, and I hope that your listeners have really enjoyed what I've got to say. And if anyone's got any questions or comments, please do contact me, and I'm happy to answer anything. But I really appreciate you asking me coming on. Thanks again.
That's great. It's great. I know I contacted you last year, but then obviously the great big COVID thing happened and not a lot was going on, and it was quite a stressful time for everyone, so things laid low and I had to change my podcast provider and all kinds of other things were going on. So we got you on in the end, but as I say, thanks once again. It's been brilliant to chat to you, Adam, and wish you all the best with your archery mental mastery for the future. Thank you very much, mate.
Thanks very much, Glenn, and thanks to everyone for listening.